and welcome. You're listening to Walnut Grove Cast. My name is Mark, and I am on today with Matt Mercier. How are you doing, Matt?
I am doing well, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Let me turn off this music, this ruckus, and I'm welcoming you from the north of me. Yeah, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for accepting my invitation to come on to discuss this, I'm going to say, not so well-known episode. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's considered one of the most memorable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if that's because it's not, it's more of an adult episode. It's not, you know, it doesn't have Natalie in it. It doesn't, you know, it's not as, there's not a lot of crazy kid antics going on.
Yeah, there's no, like, you know, pushing Nellie down the hill in a wheelchair. There's no shooting of the rabid dog with Grandpa. There's no, nobody going blind in this episode. Spoiler alert. So what we're talking about today is an episode that should have been released, I'm going to say, a good 2 weeks before it was released, 3 weeks before it was released. And this episode was released on December 12th, 1977. What episode are we reviewing today, Matt? Freedom Flight. Freedom Flight. And a lot of people going, oh, the other episode, the other Indian episode.
Right.
And I just reviewed with Suzanne Holland, Injun Boy, or Injun Kid, I think. Injun Boy.
Yep.
And this one, it really goes side by side with that particular episode. Have you had a chance to listen to that episode?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
And that was part of what, when we talked earlier about, that was actually one of the episodes I wanted to originally, but when you said you were doing that, I chose this one because I think there's some stuff I could share about, I mean, if you wouldn't mind, if you'd be
interested. Of course, yeah, that's what it's
there's
for.
Some stuff I could share in kind of in comparison to what happened in Canada with Indigenous peoples, in comparison to what we see in these, in this American TV show.
Interesting. So I'm going to get us right into the episode with the clips and give you an idea, a taste of the episode and the very interesting music. Now, this episode is extremely visual. It's not heavy on the dialogue. So we're probably going to breeze through a lot of this stuff, but we'll do our best to make it entertaining. There seems to be, I don't know if you caught this, a trend of shots we've never seen before in Little House on the Prairie. Actual prairies. Like, we're seeing landscapes. And I'm like, where the heck are they?
There's a lot of shots of, faraway shots of people riding horses over a hill or toward a, as we see in the episode, the camp where the Indigenous peoples are staying. And, you know, I should probably add a note here to the language I'm using of Indigenous peoples, because Indigenous people is the Canadian term from Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm calling it Indigenous people. That's the Canadian term for what Americans would call Native Americans.
Yeah, I just call them Indians, but that's just me. No,
that's
of course
it. I don't. Okay, well, that would be a big no-no in Canada.
Yeah, I guess you'd be Native Canadians if you really want to get more American about it.
Yeah, it's changed over the years.
It's my first Canadian joke of the episode, ladies and gentlemen. I come here every Saturday night. Please tip your waiters. So here we go. This is going to set up the kind of tone of the episode. And we just see this kid just flying on a horse. Like, he's going nuts. Like, he's Paul Revere. He goes into town. He's ringing the bell. He's getting the attention of the town. We've never seen this kid.
Yeah, his name is, I wrote it down here, Benjamin.
Benny boy. Benny the bellboy, you know? So here we go.
Benjamin, what's going on?
Indians, Mr. Ingalls, a whole bunch?
All right, now just take it easy. I don't know what you saw, but it couldn't have been Indians.
Then what in the heck are them?
Well, those are Indians. So we have a small group of Native Americans coming in on horses. They're in they're Sioux Indians, if this is going to be somewhat accurate. And it's an interesting thing. It's a very questionable thing. There's a lot of different natives and a lot of different tribes from the area.
They identify themselves as Santee, people of the Lakota.
Yeah, and Lakota is a language more than a people, but it also depends, you know. Lakota is a very, very popular language with Native Americans. And it's a language that still exists. You could still find people using Lakota. So they come in, they're wearing some, I'm not going to say that their outfits are fully accurate for the area.
Yeah, that's questionable, right?
I've made a number, I used to make a lot of crafts, and I talked about this on the Injun Kid episode, so I won't go too far into it, but he's wearing a breastplate, and what that is hair bone pipes. And they're usually cattle bone, and they're chokers and everything. I've made these things, and they're wearing. Later on, we get to see ghost shirts and different things that they're making with different, maybe lambskin and a lot of interesting stuff. I don't know if it's fully accurate. They're Indian. Their eagle feathers are clearly turkey feathers. But we're not talking. We're on Little House on the Prairie. We're not Dances with Wolves, and we are, let's introduce these guys. From what I can tell, these are genuine Native Americans that they used for the cast.
Yes.
You just cut out a little bit, but we'll just roll.
Black Elk, is that correct? And it looks like he's a genuine indigenous person.
Yeah, very interesting.
Bravo to Little House for that.
Yeah, and I'm sure Michael Landon had his... wanted some level of accuracy. Yeah. And, a lot of these things that they're wearing are really about representation. Of course, breastplates are not going to protect you against anything, but it represents the spirit of the animal. There's a deep understanding of a lot of this stuff. And I really love it. It's a beautiful thing. And oddly enough, I just want to mention this beautiful, beautiful place called Gray Owl, which used to be in Jamaica, New York, just went out of business. You know, I don't know if it had a lot to do with coronavirus. They were open since the 1930s or 1940s, and they sent out this thing just a couple weeks ago saying, sorry, we're closing our doors. And I always buy beads and everything like that. They do like hand-blown glass beads and beautiful brass beads, antiqued beads, like they're brand new, but they're antiqued, and really decent, like sinew. Sinew is made from intestines and stuff, but good stuff. And although I got a really great deal on a ton of stuff from them, I feel bad that something like this is forever gone. So it's just another sad thing. But Gray Owl, rest in peace. So here we go. This is... the introduction to the, let's call them the indigenous people. Well, actually, that's still the music, but they're coming in, and we're going to get a quick overview as to who they are and why they are there.
Right.
We get an interesting shot, too. We get, what is his name in the show? I'm sorry, the main guy, not the chief.
I think it's Black Elk.
All right, Black Elk, we get this interesting shot of him, and in the background, you have the American flag, and it's such a struggle. You know, it's like, it's a really powerful shot.
I actually got that name wrong. It's actually Little Crow.
Little Crow.
Played by Nick Ramos.
Ah, okay. All right, so here's this clip.
I am Little Crow, son of Long Elk. We are Santee. People of the Lakota, we come in peace.
What do you want here?
There is much sorrow and trouble among my people. We are moving north to a new land. We have stopped only because we have need of a white man's doctor.
I'm the doctor here. What can I do for you?
Just a minute, Doc.
And basically, it's Fatty Arbuckle in town. I don't know if you know who Fatty Arbuckle is. No, Fatty Arbuckle. Do you know who Fatty Arbuckle is? He was an actor. He's a silent film comic. And he got caught up in a whole sexual abuse case and everything in the early days of film.
Oh, no.
You know, it's a terrible thing, but that's not this guy. But he looks exactly like Fatty Arbuckle. Right, but yeah, if you look at this guy, like, wow, he should play Fatty Arbuckle in a remake of Fatty Arbuckle's life. But Fatty Arbuckle, very funny actor, but got caught up in a lot of terrible scandal back in the early days of cinema.
So this guy is not Fatty Arbuckle?
No, this guy, I don't. Didn't get this guy's name. He's a total, kind of a forgettable actor, but I'm going to look him up real quick.
Poor guy.
You do not have to do nothing for these savages. There's only three. We can handle them.
Now, hold on, McGregor. I think you best learn how to count.
So they look around. They're like, all right, we're surrounded. You know, like we, you know, Jonathan is somebody who is pretty worldly, right? So he's like, you know, look, hey, you know, if you're going to attack somebody, you better make sure you can win the fight. So
common sense.
But, you know, he did say that they came in peace. So, of course, Charles wants to know what's up with that.
I thought you said you came in peace.
And so we have. My braves only watch to see your friendliness.
I'll get my medical bag.
By the way, you're done.
Dr. Ingalls, reporting to duty.
Of course, Charles.
Right. I mean, here's the thing, Matt. We if this was a real situation, if this was based on fact, they would be writing songs about Charles Ingalls. There would be legends. There would be around the campfire. They would talk about the man with the brimmed cat hat who bore his chest for the children. So
that would sound so wrong.
Yes. So the bottom line is Dr. Ingalls reporting to duty. He's not doing anything today anyway. So we go back to their camp and we see a relatively accurate depiction of what a Native American camp would be. They have a lean-to set up. Their teepee looks right. Even the cast of extras, they seem to be correct. Like, you know, not to totally just kind of point out the way they look, but the regalia that they're wearing and the way they look and their mannerisms, everything seems to be pretty.
Yeah, they made an attempt to be accurate.
Yeah, for once.
Yeah.
And I don't know where this is filmed. I mean, it's got to be way out in California, but they are on an area. They're in an area where there is a ton of property. It is insane. I'm assuming this is just the same property, but it just, they decided to use it in a very different way. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was saying, I guess we could look that up.
Oh, no. Well, here's the thing. They're talking a lot without subtitles. It's kind of a...
Yeah, I noticed that.
A little bit lost. I understand we're supposed to listen to this as a real third party and we're just observing. But I'd like to know some level of what's going on when the dialogue's going on for like a minute, you know?
Yeah.
So that I was like, I don't know what they're trying to do here. Yeah. But they're chanting and praying. The chanting and praying is a real... tradition all religions really, right? I mean, the religion of the Native Americans are really more of a spiritual religion. They might not believe in the same kind of gods and Bibles and, you know, and all of this, but they have their own belief system, which is spiritual.
Right. It's more of, it's not like
there's not an established set of rules.
Right. Yeah. There's no.
Right.
It's, well, see, that's the thing where.
You cut out there.
In the room with me. Huh?
You're breaking up a bit.
A library technician.
Hey, Matt, can you hear me? Because you just totally vanished on me.
I can hear you. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can hear you. Okay. I'm sorry. If you could repeat what you just said.
For my library technician program that I took, we took Indigenous studies. Mm. So one of the things we learned a little bit about I'm going to have to get my textbook.
No, but you just learned a lot about the day-to-days and everything.
Yeah. Well, we learned a little bit about the spiritual or the five ways of I'll look it up.
All right.
And then I'll get back to you.
But here's the chanting and the praying that it's interesting to hear. And, these are songs, these are prayers. This is their way of coping and dealing. So Doc is in the teepee and he's checking them and doing his docly duties. And he comes out and he gives the, he determines what is wrong. We also learn a little bit more about the patient.
You didn't tell me he was your chief.
Long Elk is my father and chief of our people.
How long has he been this way?
2 days past.
Your father has suffered an apoplectic stroke, a very serious one. He's lucky to be alive.
What does this mean?
Well, a clot has formed in a blood vessel in his brain. It's blocked the flow of blood. It's caused his loss of movement and speech. He may recover, or he could have another attack. If he does.
When can he travel?
He can't.
He must. We must go on.
If he continues this forced march, it will kill him.
This is where we learn a little bit more about the politics of the time. Of course, Native Americans or Indigenous people were not exactly the most welcomed people in their own land, and it's a very dark history. But Charles goes into a little bit of it because it's also supposed to be about 1877, so we're not really. They know about what's going on. They know that the natives are restless. We know that they're kind of hated. There's a lot of racism towards them. But I don't know if the character Charles understands fully yet why everyone is so mad. So this is where you get a little touch upon that.
Well, Crow, did you jump the reservation?
Our people were starving. There was nothing to hunt.
I thought the government just gave the Indians another big piece of land.
Your government gives the Indians land no one else wants. If it were good land, they would keep it. We will not go back.
I've done all I can for him now. What he needs now is rest, food, and time. Most of all, time. I'll be back again tomorrow.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty sad thing that they're just kind of trying to maintain their community on the run, essentially. Right. So, yeah, he has a stroke. There's not really any solid way of treating something like that back in 1877. There were no blood thinners or CAT scans.
No, there was.
I guess you could drink alcohol. That could thin your blood temporarily. That's about it. But, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty sad and scary proposition that these people are in. And I think that Michael Landon really hoped to put that in the forefront. And I think he accomplishes it here for the most part. Doc gets back into town, and there's a lot of restlessness. Let's have a vote, everybody meets in the schoolhouse. Everybody needs to, show up and have an opinion.
Yeah, it's a lot of, but they did this, but they did that.
Yeah, I'm going to just play, because even though this is kind of where the show begins, really. This is where the action kind of gets a little bit wild.
If you'll all be quiet for just a minute, I'll try to explain what happened.
It's a very bossy thing to say to a room full of adults, you know? And Fatty Arbuckle's like, I even took off my hat to be here. Jeez. There's a lot of concerned white people in this room.
All right, Doc. What's going on out there?
Yeah.
It's their chief. He's sick, and he needs...
Oh, what's he got? Is it ketchup?
Yeah.
No! You no, suck! No, no, no!
That would be me. I would just yell in the middle, you suck, Doc. poor Doc. I mean, he's... I mean, we kind of discussed this recently. He's kind of the smartest guy in the town. Charles is the most level-headed. Between the two, I mean, they could really, you know, take over. But this is there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on here.
No, it's nothing like that. You cannot go doctor no engine. Let him get a color doctor. Murdering savages.
Now, I'm not really sure. I've never heard them use the word colored in this.
That's a strange context.
Yeah, I almost don't. I would need to know if the word colored was used for people of color, or black people in this period of time. And I'm just curious about that. You know, we've heard them use every other descriptor, for black people, and it's just kind of. For somebody who seems to have a lot of issues, he certainly, and he doesn't seem to hold back on those issues. He doesn't, you just wouldn't think he would be the most PC person in the world. But, yeah, it is what it is.
And, of course, I mean, this is written in the 1970s too, right? So
yeah, yeah.
You know.
But here we go. Charles is like, whoa! He put on his like super starched shirt. There's not one stain on it. He's and Caroline's in there, and she's like, she's just excited to see her husband speak up to a room full of angry people. Because I just think she loves that.
Wait a minute! Wait a minute! We don't know they came here to kill anybody. They came here in peace, just asking for help. Look, if you could have just gone out there and seen them.
What do you know about Indians, Inkles?
Now, you could probably say the same thing. Take the same scene and put it in an episode of, I don't know, not an episode of, but the movie Mars Attacks or, I don't know, or any type of alien movie and have the same type of paranoia where it's like, there's always the guy who's like, how do we know that the aliens have landed and they want to kill us? And they always end up wanting to kill you. So, of course, we think, you know, maybe we're siding with Hugh for a little bit here. No, we're not. But it's just kind of interesting how you could easily change this all to aliens, and all of a sudden we would think that he's being right. I think we're a little bit prejudiced to aliens. But here we go.
You were not here when the settlers were massacred.
That's right!
You weren't here.
You're right, I wasn't here. I wasn't here to see the whites hang hundreds of Indians either.
Don't listen to them! I'm all for wiping them out!
What are you saying?
Wipe them out! All right! Let's get our guns! We'll get them off before dark!
So what they're referring to, I think, is the same thing that they referred to last time, and that's the Dakota War of 1862. And that's when the Sioux made a number of really large attacks on hundreds and hundreds of settlers and immigrants. And it resulted in a lot of settler deaths, and it caused many people to just say, hey, I'm getting out of this area, you know, and they just kept either going west or maybe heading east. Of course, in most type of outbreaks of aggression like this, you bring in a form of military. So soldiers basically caught hundreds of Sioux men, and they interned their families, which means they put them to work, I think. I'm not really 100% sure what interning their families totally mean. But they quickly did a military tribunal and tried the men. They sentenced, I mentioned this in the Injun Kid, so it's a little bit of a repeat, but they sentenced 303 of the Sioux men to death for their crimes.
Whoa.
But President Lincoln, being the man that he was, He commuted the sentences of 263 of the 303, but there was a mass hanging of 38 Sioux men, and it was conducted on December 26, 1862, in our favorite town of Mankato. And it was to this date the largest mass execution in United States history, a disgusting smear on our history, and it is it's one of those things where it's an awful thing. So I'm sure there was a lynching of hundreds of Native Americans where Michael Landon's was just saying that the white men hanging hundreds of Native Americans. I think what they were referring to is possibly the mass hanging of this 38 people on the day after the Christian holiday of Christmas, which is just just a really dark, dark thing to do. Dead of winter in Mankato. It just seems really sad. So these guys are really kind of, they're ramped up and they're like, we're going to get these Indians. We've had enough. And they go out in their little posse, right? There's not that many of them.
Mob mentality.
They have a total, not all the men, this posse of Indian haters. But if I'm counting heads here, I mean, we have nine people in this posse. It's kind of interesting. So nine people are going to go and kill an entire grouping of Native Americans.
Good luck with that.
I think that one guy could beat them all up, you know. These guys are in pretty good shape. So we do. Here's another thing is if you look in IMDb, the man who played the chief is actually a real chief.
Oh.
Yeah. His name is, he plays Long Elk, and he's in real life. His name is Chief Geronimo Cuthley. But he's credited as Geronimo Cuthley, but he's actually Chief Geronimo Cuthley. And so I thought that was kind of cool. You know, it's like they get a legitimate guy in there. He's done a number, not a tremendous amount of films. This would be his last item in his filmography. But going back all the way to 1954, he played his first chief in a movie called Broken Lands.
Huh.
So it's kind of cool. I like looking into the background of some of these people. It's very interesting, and I thought he was very, very good. Now, we go to the Little House. Do you want to talk about what the Ingalls did at this point?
Yeah, they basically kind of haul them into their wagon, and they basically take them home, and they hide them in the barn.
Yeah, so they're housing fugitives in a way.
Yeah.
And they go into the little house. Mary has a little bit of an opinion, which I think raises eyebrows.
I want to make comment about that.
Sure. Well, I'll play and we'll talk about it.
Oh, is he a chief? Not as good as Indian chief?
Yeah, have fine Long Elk's a real life chief.
Jeez, a real life chief. When can I talk to the little girl, Pop?
I'm afraid you can't. Please drive that outside.
Who'd want to? I mean, they're all nothing but heathens.
Mary, they may not read the same Bible we do or worship God in the same way. But they're his children, too.
And Charles is looking at her like, what? This is not my kid.
Yeah, I felt like that comment was a continuity. I would almost say like a continuity error within the show, because the way she, like Mary, acts as if she's never seen an indigenous person before. Even though like a year ago, like last season, she had no problem with Joseph.
Yeah, Spotted Eagle.
So it's kind of like, Spotted Eagle, thank you. And so it's like, what?
Yeah, but this is a little bit different, I think. You know, Joseph is half white and also was brought into the town with a white woman. This is actual tribesmen. And Right. She's seeing the reaction of the town people. And although I think that her comment is off base, I think it's a real concern for the time.
Right. But I think it's more based on religious.
It's not understanding who they are and what they are. And,
right.
So here's the rest of that particular scene.
How long do you think they'll stay?
I don't know. Not longer than necessary.
Charles, are you sure we're doing the right thing?
Carolyn, I wish I knew. But I couldn't leave them there to be slaughtered.
The reservation would be so bad to put those poor children through this.
We've never known the kind of suffering they have. Running may not be the answer, but my family was starving. I think I'd do the same thing.
Charles, McGregor and his bunch are coming down the road.
But you stay here.
Dr. Ingalls reporting to duty. So, I mean, this brings back memories of, the Underground Railroad of, during, the Nazi taking over of every country in Europe, of hiding of Jews. It takes bravery, and it takes really putting your own neck on the line. And that is really what we're seeing in this particular episode, is people who are doing the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing.
Now, I wonder if that was if there was an intention to make that connection between the story in this episode and the Shoah, or whether that was just coincidental.
I mean, I think the message can be just applied to so many different people, right? These people are being hunted like they're animals, and they just want their own personal freedom and need somebody to stand up for them. So Hugh shows up drunk. No, I don't know if he might be. But here he goes, and he's just kind of curious where they are. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, another thing, too, I thought about was when Hugh McGregor makes his comment about Charles not being there with or not knowing anything about Native Americans, I'm going to assume that McGregor is ignorant of the fact that the Ingalls family already had encounters with Native Americans before, a few times.
I mean,
right, during the blizzard, when they were traveling to Walnut Grove.
Also, Charles is the millennial of the group, you know, in a way. He's the youngin', you know. These guys are easily, 15, 20 years older. One person even said, like, you were just a kid when that happened. So, and in a lot of ways, they're right. Also, he didn't grow up there. In some ways, if we're going to really look at this, Charles is a tourist. You know, he didn't grow up here. He might work the land, and people might love him and write songs about him, but he is not from there like these people are. And there's pride in a number of different ways when you really look at this. It's just at what are you willing to do to protect your land, and what are you really protecting, and from whom?
Right.
But here we go.
Ingalls, did you hear them Indians come by here tonight?
No, why? Has there been some kind of trouble?
Trouble, yeah. There's trouble. The savages run off. The cowards.
They haven't done anybody any harm, McGregor. Why don't you just leave them be?
No, I won't. I'm going to find them. And when I do find them, they'll wish they'd never seen Walnut Grove.
Good goals. He's such not a tough guy. That's, part of it. I could have thought of so many other actors that might have brought this to the table a little bit better, but maybe anybody. I mean, he's a good actor. I don't know, somebody a little bit more rugged. This guy's a little too clean-shaven for my tastes. Next day, we learn that when I first saw the scene, it's in the schoolyard. Laura's skipping rope, and I thought that they were going to let the cat out of the bag. Personally, But we have the kids just basically talking about it. And we have a little bit of a confrontation.
Pa says it's a man's Christian duty wiping out all those savages. If it weren't for him scaring them off, we'd all be dead right now.
Ron McGregor, that's not so. My pa said the Indians didn't want to fight. They only wanted a doctor.
Laura.
Yeah, your pa would side up with those heathens. Everyone knows he's an Indian lover.
That's right, he is.
Laura, come on.
Now, wouldn't Mary kind of agree with this guy?
I think, well, I mean, yeah, based on the comment she made earlier, but
yeah.
I guess maybe the glare and the pause statement got through to her.
Maybe Pa's belt got to her. You don't talk that way in my house, girl.
Come on.
So he runs up to Laura and grabs the rope.
Give me that rope.
My Pa's gonna find him. And when he does, he's going to hang them like this.
Now, this was a very, very disturbing moment. I would say probably the most physically crazy little tiny 1 second thing I've ever seen on Little House. He takes the rope and puts it around Laura's neck and tugs at her pretty hard. And Mary goes right into like her, Karate Kid stance. Kicks him in the shin and then just gives him a gut punch.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't put a rope around someone's neck, especially some girl. Jeez.
If pagan Indians is your idea of being Christian, I'd rather be a heathen!
My pa will find him. You'll see, he'll find him.
Your pa can't find his way to the outhouse.
Whoa, we don't talk that way in this school, little girl. But you're right. But you're right, Laura.
I'm not sure if they got the boy's acting is the best.
I thought he was all right. He had a good haircut. So Charles is going around. Charles runs into this kid who's hunting, and it's like, look, you're going to get us killed. And
right.
He wants to be a man. He wants to provide. He's got a funny haircut. It's kind of his bangs cut. He kind of looks like Cleopatra a little bit, but he does not have a cool haircut.
Yeah. And I'm going to assume that's not a traditional.
No, it was to cut your bangs is very traditional because, it creates a more functional, thing, but that's probably a wig. I'm thinking.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, I mean, it's a relatively traditional hairstyle.
Okay.
So going on and on, they're deciding that they're going to feed them, which is really nice. Ma's inside and they have a Dutch oven with stew and making bread, all types of, delicious goodies. So Charles comes and he delivers some of the grub to them.
Very kind.
Chief is also finally kind of awake, so he's still extremely weak looking and he's not really a part of the show for the most part.
Brought you some stew.
Got you some of my nice fresh bread.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is a lot of yabbering that we have no idea what's being said, but Laura turns to this little girl and tries to be nice to her. My mom makes the best cookies. Don't you want a cookie? And the girl's just looking at her petrified. And Laura's not really understanding exactly what's going on. Which is a very, very... Laura's lived a very...
Sheltered,
lived in a bubble. She's been safe her whole life. So she's just like, what is going on? So she learns that she's scared of her because she looks like the people or the race of people who killed this poor little girl's mother.
Right.
Very sad. Very, very sad moment.
That's what the older brother, I think it's the brother.
Yeah, I think it's the brother.
Tells
Laura
that the little sister is scared of Laura.
So Laura is just kind of conflicted on this. So they go outside and they're talking.
What's your name?
The crow says she's called Yellow Feather.
Yellow Feather. Such a pretty name. Wish I had one like it. Mine's so plain. Laura. Plain old Laura.
Well, darling, I guess you just have to live with it, huh?
Yeah. Guess.
So she's just really upset. Like, she's just... Why don't they like me?
But and Laura, I mean, yeah. Laura, I mean, she kind of already has a nickname, so.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she does have a nickname.
Yeah, she's okay.
But Laura does visit, and she gives a real kind gesture. She gives this girl her doll.
Yes.
And it's a very sweet gesture. But the brother's name is Spotted Wolf, and he isn't too happy about Laura's gift, but the chief steps in, and he's like, says something to the, to be believed that, you know, leave her alone. And the little girl seems to really love the doll, so it was a hit.
We see her with it later on in the episode.
Yeah, but she embraces it right away, and I was just thought, all right, Laura, you're doing okay. So... The little girl's got to be like 4 years old or something. Very cute little girl. And I thought she was just very, brought a lot to the table. So the next scene, we have your favorite character, Harriet. I don't know if she really is your favorite, but she's, of course, blaming the government. So here we go.
Well, I mean, what they do is march right into town in broad daylight and abduct people. How dare they?
Oh, Harriet.
Well, it's the government's fault, giving those savages all that land and food.
Pa's buying another coffee maker. Jeez, I paid a fortune for one of these real antiques, and he's just like, I'll take one.
For $1.53.
Not even that much. That would be like $32. I bet you they probably cost about 75 cents. No, less. Mm. I bet you they cost about 40 cents. Jeez.
The more do they want? Let's see now here, Mr. Ingalls. That's going to be $1.53.
See? $1.53 for everything.
Jeez.
He's just loaded. Charles Ingalls is spending money.
Mrs. Ingalls. The bloody savages. They give us the slip. They're headed toward Canada, all right.
They got across?
Yeah, you'd like to see that, wouldn't you? We've seen some troops. They'll catch them, all right. And we're going to keep scouting the area just in case they double back. No need to fear.
Oh, surely they wouldn't do that.
You never know, Mrs. Olson. That's a favorite trick of theirs. The ignorant savages.
They may be ignorant savages, McGregor. They did manage to give you the slip, didn't they? Mrs. Olson? Nels?
Good day, Mr. McGregor. See you in church tomorrow.
Ouch.
And Mrs. Olson makes a face.
Like, oh my goodness, how could you see?
But I do want to comment on... I do want to comment on the line about Canada because... you know, things weren't any better for them in Canada. I don't know how much you know of this history, but here in Canada, our government made treaties with them.
Mm-hmm.
They and the Hudson's Bay Company made treaties with the Indigenous peoples here. And one of the treaty requests was for schools for the Indigenous peoples.
But, so they would have their own segregated schools? Or
yes,
would they be a part of the public school system?
No, it was their own schools. And it was also like part of it also, but they were boarding schools and they were built on away from reserves,
mm-hmm.
where they lived. And the schools basically were run by, they were funded by the government and funded very poorly, but they were run by various Christian denominations. So 60% was run by The Catholic religious order, Oblates of Mary Immaculate.
Wait, what year is this?
This was from the late 1800s to about 1996.
So, Catholics in the late 1800s? It's kind of...
Yes, they were running, yeah, because
Even in the States, we didn't really, you know, Catholicism wasn't, although it was, you know, I mean, talking like Roman Catholic. I mean, I'm just kind of.
Oh, sure. It's okay.
Okay.
Catholic. I guess you could say Roman Catholicism has a more of a favored status in Canada.
Okay.
Because of the French, so Quebec, Montreal, Quebec, plus you know the Jesuit missionaries came here a long time ago, but So the Catholic religious order, the Oblates. Along with Presbyterian, Anglican, United Church.
More Christian.
Right? Yeah, all Christian, mm-hmm. different Christian denominations, but 60% were Catholic run.
Okay.
Ramneys, boarding schools for Native Indigenous peoples. But the problem, well, they were basically a major failure because, so the kids were basically taken there by the government, by the... They were forced to attend by law at the time. And the schools, until like, I want to say the 60s, the schools, the intention of the schools here in Canada were to kind of assimilate them into quote unquote white culture or Canadian, what was seen as Canadian culture.
Well, yeah, they were teaching them their, you know, there was their own curriculum where. You learn our traditions, our holidays, right? I mean,
right,
you were, they weren't yeah, really they were. Being too, you know, probably teaching that they're savages, right?
Right, yeah, it was, they were, you know, teaching them Christianity, teaching them, you know, you get the picture, but there's mm-hmm. also, unfortunately, there was a lot of physical abuse, and I mean, you know, the strap and beatings and, I mean, that kind of, some of that I think is was kind of standard for the time period in mm-hmm. schools, you know, and in homes. But there's also very sadly sexual abuse that happened.
Yeah, I mean, with any type of course, I mean, we're seeing it more and more, I guess, is any type of level of authority. There's always this sickening abuse of power.
It's across the board, really. I mean, I think,
yeah,
you know, but that's what happened. So that's what I mean. It was much better for them in Canada.
But you said, but you're saying it only lasted until the late 90s, and was it dissolved, or does it still exist in some form?
No, it does not. No, it doesn't. But by the 19, see, this is where things get confusing because the story as told through, because we had a commission in Canada that gathered testimonies of those who went to the schools, mostly.
Gotcha.
And the official history was from the late 1800s, so like 1880 until the last school closed in 1996. But people often forget this, that by the time the last school closed, they weren't being run by the religious, the churches anymore. They were the ones that were remained were transformed and were headed by indigenous peoples.
Interesting.
And I think even by the like 1960 something, the government had taken over the schools. They were running them.
Very good. I mean, that's interesting.
It's a complicated history. You'd have to really do research, I guess.
Seems like they did their best, and it just didn't really pan out exactly the way that they had wanted. But here back in 1877, we're... We have Hugh driving up right in front of Hans Dorfler's blacksmith. And he sees the doc and he has a little bit of a, I don't know. He has something going on his tuchus. So let's talk about it.
Oh, good morning, Hugh. Mrs. McGregor, Rob.
Where have you been? I've been looking all over for you.
Been awful busy. Why? What's wrong?
It's that old darn carbuncle, so it is.
So a carbuncle. A carbuncle is a group of, if you're eating, stop eating for a moment, a group of pus-filled bumps in a connected area of infection under his skin. So it's essentially a boil. It's a red, swollen, painful boil that they very often, it's an abscess, and they will lance it and drain it, and it's got to be gross for him to bring it up right in front of his family, and his poor wife is looking at his tuchus. So it's just kind of funny. Not funny, but it's just it's usually something that is also very treatable. It's not like really much of a big deal as long as you keep it clean. But apparently with all this rioting, he's been really irritating his carbuncle, which I've never heard of before. All right, so Doc seems to think it's kind of funny almost. And he says, basically, where are you going? Hugh doesn't seem to trust people too much.
No, and he's so set against, he's so hell-bent on killing the indigenous peoples.
Yeah, well, so, you know, he did go through the war, and, you know, he has his own deep-seated hatred for them.
Yeah.
Which, you know, of course, you know, sometimes a genuine hate like that is something that is earned. You know, like, it's possible he was really terrorized by these people. It just doesn't, you have to know where to draw the line, though, and say that these are not those people, you know?
Right, yeah.
But here, you know, he sees that Doc is heading to the, he's not going where he claims to have been going, so.
You're not going to miss service.
That's not the road to the Widow Fraser's. Go on to church like I told you. Tom, I want to use your horse. I'll be back in a bit.
Sure thing, Mr. McGregor.
His carbuncle must be acting up again. So, and yeah.
I made a note that, like, he had, like, a... if he had a blister on his butt,
mm-hmm.
and the Doc Baker needs to pierce it with a lance.
Yeah, it's it's a little gross. You know, it's a good visual. So yeah, he's basically following, he's stalking the Doc as to where he's going. So they get to the, basically, actually, I didn't mention this before, but the chief and the family are hiding out in the Ingolsadi. That's where Grandpa lived. It's, you know, it's kind of a hot spot, actually.
And have we seen the Saudi before?
Yeah, we've seen the Saudi.
Oh, okay.
I love the Saudi. It seems like a cool place to hang out. Literally, it's cool. So he gets there and he sees, Hugh sees the Native American.
McGregor.
Get inside.
Carolyn! Take the children inside. Stay there.
Hiram, get him ready to move.
No, we can't.
He's going to have to. When McGregor gets back here, he's not going to be alone.
And he's right. So McGregor's going to go, and they're going to make a run for it. We see some really sprawling shots here. I mean, they must be a quarter mile away getting some of these shots. It's really, really beautiful, and it's really just interesting to see this on Little House on the Prairie. We don't normally get these really sprawling, beautiful shots.
No, I think, yeah, like maybe I can only think of the pilot movie where there was a lot of that.
Now, we get back to the little house, and we're basically interrogating Caroline.
Oh, my God.
This gets a little dark, and this goes... It's pretty dark pretty quickly.
It's only a matter of time before my men find those tracks. Now, why don't you save us all a lot of trouble?
She's just not responding.
I cannot believe that you'd protect those heathens. I'm losing my patience now. I can make you tell me if I have to.
Mr. McGregor, if you lay a hand on me, you'd better be sure you have a lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
We picked it up. Let's go.
So this is about as angry as we see Caroline in the show. And yeah, things are pretty interesting. I would have liked to see Charles deal with this in a private manner.
The bully boys redux.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you don't say something like that and get away with it most people. As Charles and Doc and Chief and everybody is heading away to safety, they run into this old timer.
Good day, never.
Fine, but for today to you, friend.
Where are you heading?
California. The second most famous promised land.
That's going to be kind of a long trip with those old nags you got there, isn't it?
I know, but it's better than walking.
How'd you like to trade rigs?
How's that?
So he takes out this device, which is essentially called an ear trumpet.
Yes, and it was used for, you know, they didn't have hearing aids, so they used,
It would basically be a metal cylinder, usually probably, I'm going to guess, tin. And you would put the straw in your ear and it would amplify the sound. Pretty easy and simple type of thing to play with. In my catalog here, I looked it up. You can get pretty much the exact one he's holding there for $2.50, which is so it's about $60, $65. So not cheap, but definitely something that would improve your quality of life when you're having a conversation. Yeah. I just thought that was kind of cool that what he's holding looks to be pretty accurate to him.
Yeah, and I like the character. He's pretty...
He's a cute guy.
Yeah.
I said, how would you like to trade rigs?
I got no money to throw in.
You have to worry about money. I'll trade you even.
How come?
What do you care? Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. You want to trade rigs or not? What do you say?
I say yes and hallelujah.
So yeah, they basically.
He's funny.
Yeah. So the trackers come by and the trick worked. Basically, Charles's tracks are much wider. This old man has a much more narrow wheelbase. But Charles comes up to the Indian camp, you know, just your basic camp looks just like the other one. It pretty much is.
Yeah. It could be really the same land area.
Yeah. I really wouldn't know the difference at all. So here we go. We are discussing. Sorry. Here we go.
We will also have guns.
Oh, whoops. I wanted to play that.
I'll be able to stop them. You have done all you could. You do not have to stay.
They're going to have guns.
We will also have guns. I go to my father.
So, yeah, I don't think they realize, no one realizes that Native Americans had rifles, too. You know, they weren't stupid. They just might not have had the resources.
I got to be honest. I didn't know that myself.
Oh, really? Yeah. No. They're well-armed. You learn pretty quickly when you're... outgunned, I think. And it's just one of those kind of things. You know, Charles is also telling them, you got to go, but they can't go. Doc is saying, the bottom line, you cannot move your chief anymore. He's going, he cannot handle the travel, especially since Charles's new rig is a piece of junk. And that's it. The trackers catch up to the old man, and I've kind of felt bad for the old man a little bit.
Yeah.
It's empty. Where are they?
I don't know nothing. Feller stops and says he trade rigs. This fine one for my broken down. I say yes, and we go our ways.
Any engines with him? Survey man!
Yes, sir.
Let's go!
Yeah, so they're just losing it. They're losing it. Now, this is a little bit of a controversial thing for me. Charles actually picks up a gun. He's going to fight with the Indians. And it just, it's a little bit strange. I mean, all right, he's on the side that he believes in. But is he really going to shed blood here? It was a very, I was kind of curious where this was all going to be headed. Now, when the trackers get up there, they see that the Native Americans are armed with rifles. So they talk a little bit about that. They did not expect that. Maybe they expected bows and arrows and throwing axes and throwing wampum beads. I'm not really sure what they expected.
I thought they just had bows and arrows.
So did I. They must have stole them rifles from someplace.
What are we going to do? That's a lot of open country between us.
I know that. Let me think.
It looks like we got them buffaloed so far.
Angles!
I feel like Charles might have wanted to say that one line, like, we have them buffaloed so far. And he made this whole episode to just say that line. That's what I'm convinced of. Now, Joe, Charles has a period correct rifle. It's really beautiful. It's a beautiful piece. I took a screenshot of it. I'll post it. You cannot really see what the other guys are holding. We also don't get a good shot of what they're wearing. Only a couple of them, but here and there. But I like the outfits. They're halfway decent.
Yeah, McGregor!
I want to talk to you!
We're going to meet you halfway. No guns.
Agreed.
So he takes out his gun and go meet him halfway. It's kind of, you know, a little bit of a stressful little moment here.
All right, McGregor, what is it?
It'll be a bit of a showdown.
Tell them to put down their guns.
Wouldn't do any good. They wouldn't do it.
I'm giving them a chance.
I think you're a liar. All they want to do is go in peace.
Where do they have all them guns?
To keep from getting killed by people like you.
I'm asking you for the last time, Ingles. You tell them to throw down them guns.
Or what, McGregor? What are you going to do? You and the vigilante's going to come charging down the hill? You wouldn't make it halfway.
You'd shoot your own people?
You're not my people.
We're white men.
You're cowards. That's why you won't come riding down that hill. See, that's the difference between you and those Indians down there. They're not afraid to die. People like you have done so much to them through the years that dying doesn't mean anything to them anymore.
Not afraid of nothing now. Well, we'll see. There's an army post east of Sleepy Eye. We'll see how brave your Indian friends are when they're looking down the face of a Gatling gun.
Gatling gun. Now we're talking about something. Now we're talking about essentially a machine gun. You know, this, you know, the technology behind a Gatling gun is still used nowadays. But if you've never seen a Gatling gun, it's basically essentially a bunch of rifles that spin and just fire as they're spinning. It's really interesting, and it's really it'll have a single a round of cartridges, you know, and it'll be a top mounted magazine, and very often I think they're gravity fed, but it's one of these just it's a machine gun essentially, you know, it's just a rapid hand cranked machine gun, crazy. And it was used up until 1911 with World War One, kind of crazy. So, Order One's after. So that would have been the Spanish-American War.
Hmm.
Yeah, Spanish-American War. So not 100% sure. I'm sure in several wars it would have been used, but definitely in the Indian Wars, definitely Civil War, probably definitely Spanish-American War, possibly the Boxer Rebellion. So many wars. But a very popular gun for the period of time, very accurate. But I don't know if they could just go and get one. I don't know if you just kind of load it up on the thing to massacre a handful of Native Americans that aren't really doing much of anything. Right? It's very strange, kind of a strange little thing that's going on here. So that brings us to the Charles basically determines that they have 3 to 4 hours.
Right.
They got it. You know, this is it. This, the fun's over, guys. I'm packing up. I'm heading home. You know, it's Caroline has bread in the oven. I got to go home and eat. So he kind of explains it here.
They're going for the soldiers. You got 3, maybe 4 hours at the best.
We stay.
The soldiers will bring back a great gun that fires many times.
We stay. If today be forever, so it must be.
Okay.
So the chief comes out of nowhere, just kind of shows up. You're like, "Who? Where's this old bag of bones been?"
He got well.
He gets up, and he's basically realizing that the number one reason why they cannot protect themselves, the reason why they can't leave, is because the chief is alive. So what he's doing is essentially praying for his end to come. I mean, they refer to it as a death chant. I don't know if there's, I don't know how accurate a death chant is, but it's kind of sad. I'll play a little bit of it. But he's basically praying to the gods to take him. And we kind of get a little bit of, we get an understanding of what it is. So I'll let him just kind of explain.
What's he saying? A warrior I have been. Now it is all over. A hard time I have had. I am old and living an unnatural life. I stand on the edge of a life no one knows. I am anxious to go to my father, to live again as men were intended to live. It is his death chant.
It's very interesting, too. I'm looking at his necklace, his choker. And back then, beads, you know, they're still glass, but they would be made with lead, a lot of lead. So when people would do beading, their fingers would actually absorb a small amount of lead, and eventually it would affect their minds in a very serious way. Yeah, I mean, they would have such toxic levels of lead in their body that it would affect them. You know, as somebody who's worked on looms and done like very intricate beadwork, I couldn't imagine. I mean, if all the glass beads that I was using were lead, I mean, it's like you're just constantly having it absorbed. And and lead is one of those things that can completely affect you in a very negative way psychologically. So it's almost like the Mad Hatter, you know, like all the chemicals that they would use for making hats would make you go crazy. And it's wild.
So have there been people who've become schizophrenic because of lead?
I don't know, if schizophrenia is if there's any correlation between lead poisoning and that. But I do know that there's a lot of studies that show that when they stopped adding so much lead to paint, or when they cleaned up the water in a better way, where there was no with lead pipes and stuff like that, that crime went down in areas in a dramatic way. This is something that goes back to the 70s. So, you know, it's an interesting little rabbit hole to go down. But I'm not sure about schizophrenia. But I do know that it's one of those things that thankfully they realized that it was the lead that was in the glass. And they now when you go on a beaded loom, you're just... When you're losing your mind, it's just because beads are so small. And you're just like, oh, I can't do this anymore.
My fingers are too big.
But Hugh brings the infantry.
They're ready for a battle.
But the Native Americans are gone. They're nowhere to be found. And we get this cool shot
of
Doc and Charles.
I'm confused about this part.
Well, they're burning the... Yeah, I mean, I think that he died. I mean, do you think that I don't know. I don't know exactly what happened.
Or just play it and we'll discuss it after.
Yeah.
All right, Ingalls. Where are they?
They're in the mountains by now, McGregor.
Sergeant, let's go.
Hold on. Only got a handful of men here, McGregor. The guns are only good out in the open. As heavily armed as those Indians are, well, we get massacred trying to fight in cover.
You can't let them get away.
Ain't a matter of my letting them get away. They did it. You want to follow them, you go right ahead. Me, I'm going back to the post. My wife made a kidney pie for supper, and I ain't going to miss it. Let's go.
Kidney pie, you say? So, have you ever had kidney pie?
You know what? I don't think I have. Is it just with kidney beans?
No, it's actual kidney. It's, the organ. It's an organ meat type of thing.
Oh.
I've had steak and kidney pie. I'll put the recipe. I've never made it. It's one of these things I think I might want to try. But it's essentially diced beef, diced kidney, fried onions, and brown gravy.
Oh.
And usually you put a type of pie crust on top, and you go to town.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, so it sounds like something that's very very American, very late, 19th century American, simple to make, delicious. So, yeah, they're basically just watching it. This guy, I don't know, you'd think somebody stole his best friend or something like that. We don't really get a great ending here. It just kind of ends.
Like, I think it's his revenge fantasy.
But they're burning this one structure.
Right. And when I first watched this, I thought oh, they all committed suicide.
Oh, my God.
I don't know why I thought
Charles that. Killed them all, yeah.
I apologize. I mean, I just thought maybe they burned themselves in the house or in the structure. And then when they left, I thought, oh, Charles is lying. They're hiding in the water.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think about that. But they're probably a good 50 miles or 40 miles from any mountains.
Right, so. Yeah. And I forgot that there was that hour, that hour time frame. So they would have enough time to get up to the mountains.
But it's kind of interesting. It does just end with the Native American chanting. And Charles and Doc are just watching the structure burn. Kind of interesting, All in all, I think this is a really good episode, but it takes place in a different Little House universe. It really does. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mary has prejudices. We have Ma, who's being victimized by the locals. We have... is Willie and Nellie even in this? I don't recall.
No.
We don't have a school teacher. Like, I don't know. You would
think Nellie would be the one who'd be doing the, the racist taunt.
Yeah, you would think. And we also don't have Reverend Alden, who I feel as though would have been a very interesting third when it comes to all of this, to calm people down.
But, right, and then there's also that conflict. He's a minister,
yeah,
a Christian minister. But then he's also, how does it react to comments such as Mary's or the town people's?
Well, he can teach about prejudices and why we have to accept all of God's creatures, Matt. But, Matt, I want to thank you so much for doing this, man. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
This was awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And you can find Matt on Matt Mercier, right? Am I getting your name right, Mercier?
It's Mercier.
But it's okay. I have to put on my beret when I see your name. Matt Mercier. So, thank you. You can find Matt on Facebook. He hangs out in the Walnut Grove cast group. And among a number of other groups, you have a lot of different interests. So, I really can't thank you enough for coming on here and talking about this episode.